Good afternoon and welcome to the July edition of Our Town. We're going to kick it off with Alicia DiNicola. She's speaking with Jennifer McKenzie.
Fulbright grant recipient Jennifer McKenzie is Sayusa School District's teacher librarian. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in. Librarians' world have changed quite a bit since many of us were in school, I think. And it's not just about books anymore. Jen's also an expert in media studies, specifically online media and digital literacy. Her work has garnered her a coveted Fulbright grant, an honor given to only 400 teachers each year from around the world. It's quite an honor to have a Fulbright scholar working in our school district, and it's been almost a year since you were notified. And you just went to the International Society of Technology in Education. Can you tell us a little bit about both your Fulbright and how it and the weekend you just spent?
Yeah, I'll start with ISTE because I just came back from that conference. It's been my dream to go forever, and I got to present. And so the International Society for Technology in Education is the globe's premier organization for embedding educational practices into teaching and learning. And the founder of ISTE recently passed away. He was actually living here in Florence, Oregon. His name was David Mornson. So he founded ISTE way back in the 70s, and it's grown into this huge global network for educators passionate about educational technology. And the presentation that I did was with two colleagues that I've been working with online for the past year, and I got to meet them in person for the first time right before we started our presentation. So Michelle Singh is a colleague from Florida. She is a CEO of her own online learning company, and Tracy Rowley is a technology integration specialist from Arizona. And the topic of our presentation was all about virtual learning experiences. So it was called Start with Cats, virtual experiences that bring the community into the classroom. And so that was my first experience at ISTE. What I loved the most was being able to connect with educators that I've been following with and collaborating with for years, like some educators more than 5 years online. And this was the first opportunity I had to meet them all in person. It was beautiful. It was like a big, huge homecoming or reunion. And so that was this past weekend. And yes, I'm also a Fulbright scholar. I got to link up with quite a few Fulbright scholars at ISTE in New Orleans this past weekend. And as you mentioned, I think I like to think of Fulbright as one big, huge, awesome global education research network. Okay. And it is very prestigious. I'm a first generation college student, so it is quite an honor to be considered a Fulbright scholar. I'm specifically in the Fulbright Teachers for Global Classrooms program, which is specifically designed for K-12 educators, so we don't have to take like a sabbatical to go away for a couple of years to conduct educational research in another country. I have been working this past year with a cohort of 67 educators from the U.S. It's a total of 400 educators internationally, and so I've been working online with colleagues to develop global curriculum resources and to build connections and to connect learning communities together from across the country. And I will soon be traveling for about 3 weeks to experience an international learning community. I don't know where yet or when I'm going. That's the kicker.
So 3 weeks and you don't yet know where you're going. That all sounds really cool. When you talk to parents, right? So you say embedding, you know, technology into the curriculum. What do you mean by that? What does it mean for kids? Like, what does that look like?
Right. Yeah. Well, I will speak to specifically a couple of collaborations that we've done already in the community. So when you're talking about digital citizenship, and we follow, we just embedded this the past 2 years, Common Sense Media digital citizenship coursework and instruction. That's the standard in the nation. And usually people's basic understanding of digital citizenship is protection and privacy, right? Like we want our kids to be safe online. But it's so much more than that. So that's like step one, like very basic. What you really want to do is move your students to digital leadership. And that's like the top of the pyramid, students putting digital citizenship into action. And what does that mean? Well, it means that our students understand how to harness the power of technology, particularly social media, to be change makers in the world. So it's using tech tools strategically. It's using social media with empathy and responsibly to enact change in our community. So I've been collaborating left and right with organizations all over the city since I've been here through our cell phone and a selfie stick virtual field trips. They are literally the highlight of every single week. We go out and explore and connect with a new community member. And one of our favorite collaborations is with the Oregon Coast Humane Society. Elizabeth Thompson is amazing. And she also masterfully models appropriate use of social media to enact change. So you see her using her social media to garner dollars for funding and support through social media posts. You see her using social media to get pets adopted and to collaborate and connect with other organizations here in Florence. So a couple of things that we've done with them specifically, at the very beginning of the year, I see all K-5 students through library rotations about once a month. And one of our initial digital citizenship lessons was all about what does it mean? What's the purpose and function of hashtags and tags when you're doing a social media post? And obviously, we teach students that you have to use your social media power strategically and with empathy and responsibly. So I gave students this scenario. We're going to pretend we're trying to get these animals adopted at the Humane Society. You're too young to be on social media posting this, but let's draw out our social media posts. And so kids practiced pretending to get animals adopted, and we're coming up with kind hashtags like Oregon Coast Humane Society, adopt me, type little hashtags and tags. And then I posted through my social media pictures of their work. And then the Humane Society reposted those posts as well. And then towards the end of the school year, another thing that we did was we had students anywhere from kindergarten to fourth grade who were working on their persuasive writing. And so we had them write persuasive paragraphs from the perspective of the animals at the shelter. And they also drew these darling little pictures to go with it. And then I took all of those down to the Humane Society. They posted those on the kennels. So that alone helped get some animals adopted. And then both Elizabeth and I were taking pictures and reposting on social media so we get that broader reach into the community. So those are just two really basic examples of amplifying your message through social media and being a digital leader. Like, to be a leader requires being a change maker. You're not a leader if you're not a change maker.
And yeah. we know that there's some ethical issues with the internet and Facebook and all of these places that kids can get involved, but they're tools, and the tools can be used really unethically and really ethically. And so one of the things that you're doing and one of the things that your research and your teaching come together with is how to use these things with a sort of ethics of kindness, mm-hmm. and an ethics of community building and working towards something as opposed to some of the more harmful things that can happen with media.
Yeah, you know, as we all know, social media can be used in nefarious ways, right? And the research tells us, educational research tells us, you can't just tell kids don't. You can't just constantly warn them of the bad things that can happen on social media. You have to engage them in proactively using the tool for good. Okay, so we often talk about what our digital footprint is. It means that the minute your fingers hit any kind of electronic device, whatever you're posting or responding to literally lives forever. And we really try to boost that knowledge the older kids get, particularly into high school, because I've seen students lose scholarships to college because of one ridiculous Twitter post. You know, our young people don't always grasp the magnitude of the permanence of their digital footprint. So that's why, hey, I want to start at, you know, K-12, like start early and show kids how to use it for good instead of always talking to them about how they shouldn't be using it.
And we train students into a bunch of things in education, right? And this is something that's here to stay. A lot of us who may wish at times, at least, that it wasn't, but it's here to stay. It's something that kids grow up with. It's something mm-hmm. that we all use now, even those of us who are reluctant sometimes. And so making sure that kids grow up with the comfort in it and a politeness training, allowing them to kind of grow into it as opposed to having to face it as it's becoming a problem.
Right. Yeah. And they have opportunities at their fingertips to connect across the globe in ways that you and I did not have when we were their age, right? I always, whenever I'm teaching digital citizenship, my students just laugh. I'm like, the first time I used the internet was my senior year in high school. I graduated in 1998. The first time I sent an email, my freshman year in college. I didn't have the opportunity to connect with students in Africa or Australia, all from the confines of my classroom, like our students do now. So it's embracing those global connections and just think where our students are going to be by the time they graduate and the things that they're going to be able to accomplish just by virtue of having access. They have access that we did not have, that I did not have when I was younger.
It's pretty exciting. Amazing. It's scary, yes. But it's also pretty amazing. You are a teacher librarian.
Yes.
And how long has it been since we've had a teacher librarian at CEUSLA?
I think it's been, you know, somewhere between 15 to 20 years since we've had a certified teacher librarian in the school district.
Why is that important?
Well, let me tell you, teacher librarians are master teachers, they're cross-curricular teachers, they're tech integration specialists, and they can function as instructional coaches. I have 5 Teacher of the Year awards spanning middle school, high school, and into the college level. I was an English teacher for about 15 years before I transitioned over into being a teacher librarian. And 21st century libraries are no longer quiet, book-centric spaces. 21st century libraries are innovation hubs. Like, if you fully actualize what those spaces can do, we can be innovative hubs for all of campuses. We should be the heart of every single campus. And so our priority standards, when I was an English teacher through Common Core State Standards, our priority standards were reading, writing, language, and speaking and listening. Well, similarly, teacher librarians have very similar standards. It's reading advocacy, information and media literacy, digital citizenship and ethics, and then district-wide tech integration. So those are all the things that I do on a daily basis. I bebop up and down the streets. We're growing our library spaces and moving them from book-centric spaces to spaces of innovation. We have been really growing our makerspace hubs in every library this past year. We advocated for funding to make a lot of this happen with our school board. I'm always a firm believer in you get what you pay for, so you have to have some funding to start out. And so we have a lot of self-serve makerspace stations, and a makerspace, it can be low-tech to high-tech. It's just providing a space and access to supplies to let students tinker and explore, and it's all focused on the engineering design process. So even when I have kiddos constructing with paper, they are still going through that whole engineering design process where they're coming up with a prototype and testing it out and thinking about ways in which they would do things differently the next time. So we have lots of different implements and things to build with, like Kiva blocks and Legos, and we got stick together posters this year, and a couple of new things I hope to implement next year. We were just beginning to embed 3D printers into our libraries, like collabing with our CTE folks and getting student mentors to run those 3D printers in each of our libraries. I hope to bring in Oculus virtual reality headsets next year. I had them at my last library, and they were a hit, nonstop, all day, every day. And then some really cool things that I saw at ISTE that I hope to bring this fall. Strobbies are a really fun building implement that you can also mechanize with some very basic coding. So you can build structures and then move them. And I also ran across some robot dogs. Like, ooh, how cool would it be for each school library to have its own little robot dog?
So two things I'm thinking right now is how lucky students are, because you follow them from first grade to 12th grade, right? So you are one of the few things that stays the same and familiar, and you grow your curriculum, the things that you do for students as they get older. You follow them, you know who they are, you know what they need, and
what
you know,
an honor
if we
right?
teach right if we teach students where they are, you have a really good idea each year of where students are. And then I also wanted to ask you, what does this have to do with reading?
So my theme for our libraries this coming year, and I started it in the high school library this year, but the words innovate, collaborate, and explore. Those are 3 specific words from the American Library Association school library language. And reading is embedded in all of those things, right? Reading is the pathway to all of those things. Reading is the pathway to innovation, collaboration, and exploration. So reading isn't going anywhere. anywhere. Sure. And if you're a reader, research tells us you're going to be a more empathetic person. And don't we need that in our world right now? I'm always looking for collaboration. So I drum up business up and down the street in Sayusa School District every day. I very strategically seek specific lessons, particularly in database and research instruction. So I strategically embed throughout English literature, English language arts classes for information and media literacy, makerspace lessons throughout K-12. And then I am still in search of a weekly virtual field trip heading into the next school year. I've been trying to kind of frame those trips based on teachers' curricular content, as well as the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. That's what all of my Fulbright work is centered around. But yes, I'm still seeking community collabs. So if you would like to be featured in our Sayusa School District Library Media.
Jennifer McKenzie, who can be reached also at the Sayusa School District through their website, is our very own Fulbright scholar and teacher librarian working for our community and our kids. We're lucky to have you here. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Alicia. Coming up next, we will speak with Graham Ross and with Kay King about the Quinch Street property that will soon be, hopefully, a hotel on the July edition of Our Town.